This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is The Sidebar for the week of April 21st, 2017. I'm Steve Scully in Washington. Our guest this week is Niall Gardner. He is a former aide to British Prime Minister Thatcher and now the director of the Heritage Foundation's Margaret Thatcher Centre for Freedom. We talked with him about Brexit and the upcoming general election in the UK.
You've got the Labour Party on life support. And so one of the biggest questions is going to be how big is the defeat for Labour? I think it's going to be the scenario here.
Niall Gardner, so much news coming out of Great Britain this week, but the motivating factor, the driving force, has been the issue of Brexit. How did the UK get to this point?
Well, it all, of course, began with the stunning referendum result. June 23rd last year, Britain held a historic referendum on its future membership of the European Union. By nearly 52% to 48%, the British people decided to leave the EU, and 2 years from now, Britain will be fully outside of the European Union. And of course, this historic referendum vote was based upon, I think, many decades of discontent among the British public with the European Union. And I think that for most British people, the EU had become really controlling, interfering in the lives of ordinary Britons, with a huge amount of I'd say control over British laws, British regulations, the British economy, on a wide range of fronts. I think the growing view among the British public was that it was time to throw off the shackles of the European Union and become a free sovereign nation once again.
And you think this is a good thing for Great Britain?
Yeah, I do. I do think that it was the right decision actually for the British people to leave the European Union. After all, if you want to be a truly free sovereign nation, you can't be a member of the EU. I mean, the EU has evolved into a supranational body. You can't control, for example, your own borders, actually, as a member of the European Union. You can't decide who comes into your country from other parts of the EU. You can't make your own free trade deals. About two-thirds of British law is decided in Brussels. And so Britain, which has a great history as a you know, as a tremendously successful country, as a nation that at one time, of course, held sway over about a third of the world, in recent decades, Britain had become, I would say, a far less free country. And you know, the British people want to decide their own destiny. They want to have complete freedom to control their own borders, to negotiate free trade deals across the world, and of course to decide their own laws. And you can only do that outside of the European Union.
I want to come back to the mechanics of what it means for Great Britain, but let's talk about the announcement on Tuesday by the British Prime Minister, a surprise announcement, elections on June the 8th, called a snap election. What led to this, and what does it mean for the Conservatives and for the Labour Party?
Yes, I mean, a very, very interesting decision by Theresa May after she had made a series of denials, actually, over the past few weeks, saying that she was not interested, actually, in calling an early general election. I think what prompted this move by Theresa May was a series of polls over the past few days, which have indicated that the Conservatives are way ahead of the Labour Party. And at the moment, the government has a working majority of only about 17 seats in the House of Commons. Projections show that if the Conservatives do well in the June 8th election, that the Conservatives should have a working majority of around 68 seats, and they would in fact be about 200 seats ahead of the Labour Party. And so the Conservatives would be in a stunningly good position actually push through with its Brexit agenda. And at the moment, with such a slim overall working majority, it's a rather precarious situation actually for the government on many fronts. So a robust showing in the June 8th general election for Theresa May and for the Conservative Party would give them far more power actually to do what they want to achieve in terms of the Brexit agenda.
Well, explain that. What do they want to achieve? How would that empower the Conservative Party and the British Prime Minister? And what does it mean moving forward?
Yeah, you have basically 2 years of very, very tough negotiations with the European Union. And the government, of course, has vowed to push ahead with Brexit, regardless of the deal that is struck with the EU. And so the government would be prepared, for example, to take Britain onto WTO trading rules, actually, if they don't get the deal they want with the European Union. So it's certainly going to be a tough couple of years. But if indeed the Conservative Party has, or the British government has, a significantly bigger majority, it gives them far more, I would say, power within the House of Commons to push through with its Brexit agenda. And so the prospect of some kind of, growing rebellion against the government would be greatly, greatly reduced, actually, with a general election on June 8th.
From your standpoint, is Theresa May the right person to be leading this effort?
Yeah, I think, actually, Theresa May has done extremely well as Prime Minister. She was a surprise choice for Prime Minister because she had, in fact, not campaigned for Brexit. She had been on the Remain side, and she had sided with David Cameron. And, of course, Cameron had vociferously opposed Brexit. But at the same time, Theresa May was careful not to campaign aggressively for the Remain side. And so she didn't alienate the Brexit members of Parliament. With a divided Brexit camp, actually, in the aftermath of the of last year's June 23rd referendum, Theresa May emerged really as a consensus candidate. She has a very strong record as a, she had a strong record as a government minister, and many MPs saw her as someone who could lead the Conservative Party and unite the party in a very strong fashion. I think she's done that. I do think she is a leader who's demonstrated tremendous resolve. She's been fully committed to the Brexit process, respecting the will of the British people. That's very important. And I think, in some ways, just as Margaret Thatcher did, Theresa May appeals to Middle England. She has a good sense of the pulse, the beating heart of Middle England. That's important, I think, for a British Prime Minister who wants to lead the country at a time of tremendous transition with Brexit.
Niall Gardner, let's go back to the mechanics of what this means. If you are a producer of any product that wants to continue to sell that product to Europe, can British companies still do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, post-Brexit, the British economy is going to continue to do very well. It's already the leading G7 economy in terms of economic growth. Brexit has not resulted actually in a reduction of foreign investment into the United Kingdom. Britain has by far the strongest major economy in Europe. And the reality is, as the world's fifth largest economy, Europe needs trade with Britain. It needs British investment. It needs goods and services flowing freely. And so I think that you are going to see, I mean, my view is you are going to see a a good deal struck between Britain and the European Union. Both sides do need each other. I would argue that Europe needs Britain more than the other way around, actually. But
really?
Yeah, I mean, after all, I think that only about 8% or so of British companies, in fact, do business with the European Union. And so, the idea that Britain is sort of entirely dependent on the EU is really a myth. The EU is important, of course, for British trading interests, and I think about 47% of overall British trade is with the European Union, but less than 10% of British companies actually do business with the EU. And so it's in the interest of both Britain and the European Union, actually, to negotiate a good agreement here. And my hope is that we are going to have a high degree of pragmatism from EU leaders, keen to do a deal rather than to enter into some sort of mean-spirited arrangement with Britain. That's not in Europe's interests. And I would hope that EU leaders will do all they can to ensure that, you know, trade, investment, etc., continues to flow between Britain and the EU.
We talked with Mark Phillips, CBS News London correspondent. His analogy was Brexit was similar to a divorce. The proceedings now going on, as you point out, over the next 2 years. What has to happen if you use that divorce analogy? What are the legal issues between the EU and Great Britain?
Yeah, it has been compared to a divorce, and it's important to bear in mind just how deep-rooted, actually, the European Union has become in terms of, you know, British regulations, laws, legislation, etc. And to extricate Britain from over 40 years of arrangements with the European Union is going to be undoubtedly a tough process. It's going to be a hard-fought process. And in order to fully, I would say, remove European Union law from British law is going to take time. And I think that the British government is under no illusions with regard to just how hard these negotiations are going to be. And I do hope that this will be an amicable divorce, actually, between the EU and Great Britain. And I think it's in the interests of both sides for an amicable arrangement to be made. But one thing is certain, the British government is firmly committed to what is known as a hard Brexit. In other words, Britain will not remain part of the single market. Britain will not have its borders, for example, controlled by the European Union. There will no longer be the free movement of people between Britain and the European Union. Britain will control who comes into the country from the EU. And so I think that there are very clear red lines being set on both sides here, which I think will result in tough negotiations. But I think at the end of the day, this will be in the best interests of both Britain and the European Union.
And yet the UK will remain in the G7 and will remain a NATO member, correct?
Oh, of course, yeah. Britain will remain a major global player. In fact, I would argue that Brexit results in an even stronger Britain on the world stage. Without a doubt, Britain will remain fully committed to its global commitments. It will be a very powerful member of the NATO alliance. It will continue, of course, to be a permanent member of the UN Security Council, member of the G7. I would say that, you know, with the greater level of independence that Britain has, Britain can be a more forceful operator on the world stage. We've already seen that with regard to Britain's dealings with Russia, where Britain is by far the toughest opponent of Vladimir Putin in Europe today. And even in the recent discussions we saw over Syria, for example, and Britain took a far harder line against Moscow than other European countries. The British government pushed for additional sanctions against Moscow, which were rejected actually by the Germans, the French, and the Italians. So the idea that with Brexit, Britain is going to be softer towards Moscow simply isn't true. Quite the opposite is the case, actually.
And so with all of this going on and all of this background, the election's now scheduled for June 8th. I want to talk to you in a moment about what that campaign will look like. But explain what is happening in Scotland.
Yeah, well, of course, Scotland voted against Brexit. And in fact, Scotland saw the highest levels of opposition to Brexit, other than some parts of inner London, for example. So the Scots certainly have overall a different view of Brexit compared to most English voters. Having said that, at least a third of Scots voted for Brexit. And so there is a sizable minority in Scotland that backs Brexit. There have been renewed calls by the Scottish Nationalist Party for another referendum on Scotland's membership of the United Kingdom. The last vote, of course, was emphatically won by the pro-union side. I think it was a 55-45% vote in favour of staying as part of the United Kingdom. The latest polling indicates that around 55% of Scots wish to remain part of the UK, even with Brexit. And so if another referendum were to be held, I don't think the result would be significantly different to the last referendum held a couple of years ago. So for the Scottish Nationalists, it's a big gamble. And if Theresa May agrees to holding a second referendum on Scottish membership of the United Kingdom, I would expect the Scottish Nationalists to again to lose pretty heavily, actually. And if they do lose, well, that would probably result in the downfall of Nicola Sturgeon, the leader of the Scottish Nationalists. But what the Scottish Nationalists are doing at the moment is they're basically reaching out to a wide range of European Union leaders to get their backing for EU membership if indeed if Scotland left the United Kingdom. A big issue, of course, of Scots would be the issue of whether they could rejoin or whether they could become part of the European Union. And so they've launched a big sort of diplomatic campaign in European capitals at the moment to try and secure European support. And so it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, various European countries respond to this. Significantly, Spain, for example, which had at the last referendum talked about vetoing Scottish membership of the European Union, Spain is now offering quite a different approach because they are trying to stir up tensions over Gibraltar, of course, British overseas territory on the edge of Spain. And Britain has made it 100% clear that Gibraltar will remain British and there will be no deal struck with Spain. And so in retaliation, the Spanish are, I think, stirring up the Scottish nationalist issue. And so there are all sorts of dynamics that work across Europe, highly complicated scenario. But my sense is that, you know, Scotland will not be leaving the United Kingdom with or without a referendum. I don't think that there is public support for a Scottish exit from the UK.
Let me follow up on a couple of points. You touched on immigration and the impact it will have in Great Britain. What could we see that would be different?
I think that, with regard to immigration, I don't think that Brexit is going to fundamentally change the fact that, you know, Great Britain is a highly attractive place for highly skilled talent. Britain will continue to attract, I think, a lot of the brightest minds from all over the world. The biggest difference now is that the brightest talent across the world from outside of the European Union will now have a more, equal chance of being able to work in the United Kingdom. And so at the moment, the system discriminates in favour of EU nationals. And I think that once Brexit takes place, the advantage that EU nationals have will be removed.
And what about the future of the European Union? Will it be around in 20, 25 years?
It's very hard to predict what's going to happen with the European Union. I think that the EU can move in a number of possible directions. One possible direction, which is being pushed forward by both France and Germany at the moment, is towards the greater centralization of power, moving towards a sort of European superstate. That may be the direction that we could see the EU moving in the coming years. In my view, that would be a big mistake, but that's certainly, I think, the view of Berlin and Paris. But that view is strongly opposed by, for example, the Poles, the Hungarians, Eastern and Central European countries who don't want to see a centralized Europe. And so we are seeing the development of competing poles of power now within the EU. On the other hand, we could see the EU beginning to disintegrate bit by bit. Brexit may be the beginning of the fragmentation of the European Union, with further countries holding referenda in the coming years on EU membership. Polling suggests that in many European countries, support for the EU is sort of wafer thin. And so you can't rule out the possibility, for example, in the next few years of, say, countries like Sweden, Denmark, for example, Holland, Ireland, voting on EU membership. And those votes would be extremely close, I would think. Also, a lot hinges on the outcome of the French presidential elections. First round coming up very shortly. Two of the leading candidates, Marine Le Pen and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, are opposed in principle to EU membership for France.
And that would be significant.
Yeah, and so if either of those ascended to the Elysee Palace, you would see a fundamental change in French policy on the European Union. If France were to hold a referendum and actually withdraw from the EU, that would be the end of the European project. Because after all, the European project really is a Franco-German project. And if the French were to leave, I think it would be all over. And so there are many, many scenarios that could come about, but certainly you can't rule out the possibility of a French referendum on the EU and a French exit. That is a possibility at the moment. I'd say on balance, with regard to the French elections, you are more likely to see, Emmanuel Macron as the figure who comes out of this as the next French president. But Macron, of course, is very pro-EU. But you just can't rule out, other scenarios emerging. In France, there's so much public discontent at the moment, so much fear as well with regard to the security situation in France and the rise of Islamist terrorism, that we could see an unexpected result in the French election. We can't rule it out.
And you made reference to the next 2 years, the process involved with Great Britain. What are the benchmarks? What will you be looking at?
Yeah, I think that, I think you have to look at benchmarks both in Europe and on the world stage. So, for example, on the world stage, Britain will start to negotiate a series of free trade agreements. Even as an EU member, it's going to start the discussions. And those discussions will begin very shortly with the United States, for example. And the British government is already talking about, I believe, 55 countries about a free trade agreements. And so I think one by one, you'll start to see these deals being taking shape. They can only be implemented once Britain, of course, leaves the European Union. So I think that on the US side, for example, the big thing to look for is a US-UK free trade deal, which could even be implemented within 90 days of Britain leaving the European Union 2 years from now. I think in Europe, you are going to see, a series of sort of marathon summits and negotiations taking place over the course of the next 2 years. It will be interesting to see just how much ground European Union leaders give in these negotiations. At the moment, the French and the Germans are playing hardball. It will be very, very interesting to see the degree to which European leaders are willing to be pragmatic and willing to concede ground to Britain in the interest of getting a good trading agreement between the UK and the European Union. And let's not forget that, the UK, its population is expected to rise to about 80 million people, within the next half century or so. Germany's population will fall from 80 million to about 65 million. The UK's economy will overtake Germany's by 2030, according to various projections. And so, Britain will be, within the next 15 years, the biggest economic power by far in Europe. And so I think that this is a time when European leaders need to focus minds and negotiate in good faith, without spite and without malice. And they will find, I think, on the British side, a willingness to work closely with European partners, provided that there is the respect given by Europe.
And oh, by the way, there's going to be an election on June the 8th. So let me conclude with that. What's it going to look like?
Yeah, well, June 8th is going to be an extremely exciting day. I think you're going to see a big turnout in this election, because what Brexit has done is it's greatly energized British conservatives. I think that Brexit has been a tremendous unifying force for the conservative parties. I think you're going to see conservative voters turning out in large numbers. The latest poll show the conservatives, polling 43% to 45% or so. The Labour Party's polling at 23%. We could be seeing actually, I don't like to call it the death of the Labour Party, but you've got the Labour Party on life support. And so one of the biggest questions is going to be how big is the defeat for Labour? I think is going to be the scenario here. Are we going to see the Labour Party scraping 20% of the vote in a general election, which would be absolutely stunning? This is the party of Tony Blair that just, 15 years ago looked unassailable. Even just over a decade ago, people had written off the Conservative Party as a dinosaur. Pundits were saying the Conservatives could never be in power again. Well, now they are completely in the driving seat. And I think what we are going to see is a Theresa May government return to office with tremendous new authority and a big majority.
Before we let you go, where's home for you originally?
Well, I mean, I've lived in, various parts of the UK. I've lived in London, and I've lived in Oxford, I've lived in the West Country. And I think that, what I would say, having, spent a great deal of time on both sides of the Atlantic, is that, both Britain and America are countries that, play a crucially important role in terms of leading the free world. And so what happens in Britain is very, very important for the United States. The special relationship is extremely important for both countries. And I think that if we have a stronger government in Britain with a successful Brexit, that's good for America. It's good for the American people. And so I think that, the outcome of this election is very important, actually, for not only for the British people, but for the people of the United States as well.
Niall Gardner, who is the director of the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington, D.C., thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to C-SPAN's The Sidebar. Be sure to follow C-SPAN and C-SPAN Radio on Twitter, and let us know what you'd like to hear about in future episodes by using the hashtag C-SPAN Sidebar. If you like the program, please like, rate, and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. By the way, every C-SPAN podcast is available on the free C-SPAN Radio app for Apple and Android devices, as well as Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening.